We'll begin chapter 17 today, first 10 verses, the first section. In the last chapter, it's chapter 16, Krishna established that those who are faithful followers of the Shastra become divine, or are divine, and those who lack faith in the Shastras are demoniac. But what category are the men who have some faith but who don't follow Shastra? They have some faith in something other than Shastra. You can turn this down a little bit? A little bit? Yeah. Okay. And Arjuna opens the chapter by using the same words Krishna used in at the end of the last chapter. Ye shastra vidim utsrija. Right? That's text 23. Another understanding of this link is that in chapter 15, Krishna described the banyan tree of the material world. And in chapter 16, Krishna described the topmost and the lowest part of the tree. And now he's describing the other parts of the tree. Maybe like in the middle, you can consider. People who aren't at the lowest stage, but who are not divine also. So, Vishnu Chakravarti of Baladeva Vidyabhushan has written that Arjuna has asked the following question, or posed the following doubt to Lord Krishna. You have said in previous chapters that those who study and follow the Vedic injunctions and have faith in Vedic authority are devas. Then you said that those who disregard the Vedas are asuras. But what is the position of those who have understood the Vedas, but who, because of lack of diligence or laziness, have abandoned Vedic injunctions and instead worship the devas and others with a kind of worldly faith? Lokik shraddha. What is their position? What is their position relative to your definition of deva and asura? Please consider that they have sincere faith, but they neglect the Vedas. So let us chant this Arjuna's question. Yeah, that is just a commentary on the question, basically, expanding. And Prabhupada does the same thing in his purport. Arjuna vacha ye shastra vidhim utsrijya yajante shraddhayan vitaha tesham nishtha tukha krishna sattvam aho rajastamaham. Arjuna inquired, O Krishna, what is the situation of those who do not follow the principles of scripture but worship according to their own imagination? Are they in goodness, passion, or in ignorance? So Prabhupada used the word imagination. And so he's taking that word faith in a very lokic way, mundane way, isn't it? Because faith usually has a much more, you know, powerful meaning. So he just says, calls it imagination. So this is not the usual kind of shraddha that we hear about. Prabhupada writes in his purport, in the fourth chapter, 39th verse, it is said that a person faithful to a particular type of worship gradually becomes elevated to the stage of knowledge and attains the highest perfectional stage of peace and prosperity. This was mentioned by Baladeva Vidyabhushan, Shadava Labhate Gyanam. Right? Those who have faith, they get knowledge, and then they attain peace. In the 16th chapter, it is concluded, now he's quoting this, 1623, Yashastra Vidam Utsidya. It is concluded that one who does not follow the principles laid down in the scriptures is called an asura, demon, and one who follows the scriptural injunctions faithfully is called a deva, or demigod. Now, if one, with faith, follows some rules which are not mentioned in the scriptural injunctions, what is his position? This doubt of Arjuna is to be cleared by Krishna. And Prabhupada gives four connotations of Arjuna's question in this purport. Are those who create some sort of God by selecting a human being and placing their faith in him, worshipping in goodness, passion, or ignorance? What would you say? Do such persons attain the perfectional stage of life? No. Is it possible for them to be situated in real knowledge and elevate themselves to the highest perfectional stage? No. Do those who do not follow the rules and regulations of the scriptures, but who have faith in something and worship gods and demigods and men, attain success in their effort? Arjuna is putting these questions to Krishna. So, a very practical question. Especially nowadays, there's so many different kinds of people, and they worship. As the time has rolled on in Kali Yuga, the strict adherence to the scripture has gradually waned. And people just follow their imagination, or they follow their family tradition, you know, what their grandfather and their great-grandfather followed, even if it's not in the scripture. And Krishna also asked his father when he was doing the Indra Yajna, what kind of sacrifice is this? Is this according to the Vedas or just some, you know, local custom? Right? So even at that time, there was a tendency just to, for families or certain castes or certain villages to perform some pujas or something like this just because of custom. And of course you can imagine now after so much time has passed, now people have develop faith in those customs through many generations. Or sometimes people just have their own idea, as Prabhupada says, by their imagination. So, but they're doing puja, they have faith, they offer prayers, they bow down, but it's not found in the scriptures. Right? So what happens to those people? They're sincere, right? They're not cheaters, but they're just either they somehow or other, for one reason or another, they've kind of deviated from the scriptures. You know, due to laziness, or that it's so troublesome, or just lack of diligence, means they don't have the proper determination, like this. So in this way, you have these different connotations of the same question. So now Krishna gives his answer in text 2. And this section is called Faith, Worship, and Foods in the Modes, in the Gunas. Huh? From 1 to 10. Shraddha, Aradhana, and Anna. Anna, I'm saying Guneshu, Anna. Food. Faith, worship, and foods in the modes. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Chi Vidha Bhavati Shraddha Dehi Namsa Swabhavaja Satviki Rajasi Chaiva Tamasi Cheti Tam Shrinu. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, according to the modes of nature acquired by the embodied soul, one's faith can be of three kinds, in goodness, in passion, or in ignorance. Now hear about this. So, Tri Vidha Bhavati Shraddha, three kinds of faith can develop. How? Svabhavaja, right? The faith which is born from past samskars or past impressions. Right? Svabhavaja is the nature at the time of birth, again. And these can be in sattvic, rajasic, or tamasic. So now, Srinu, please listen to this. So, we're drawn to a certain family, certain body, according to our karma. And that means our consciousness. Our consciousness attracts us to the consciousness of our parents at the time of birth. So, svabhava is from the time of birth. It controls us, but it can also be changed. Just like the usher in the movie theater. I just thought of that example the other day. I never used that before, but I think it's okay. A good example. The usher in the movie theater. The usher. In the West, they have a man who shows you to the seat and with a flashlight. This is the svabhava. Prabhupada writes in the commentary, but this nature can be changed if one associates with a bona fide spiritual master and abides by his rules and the scriptures. Gradually, one can change his position from ignorance to goodness, or from passion to goodness, or from ignorance to passion to goodness, which is generally the way it goes. The conclusion is that blind faith in a particular mode of nature cannot help a person become elevated to the perfectional stage. One has to consider things carefully with intelligence in the association of a bona fide spiritual master. Right? Blind faith doesn't help. Important point. So the lokik shraddha from the mind is not enough to elevate you. You have to actually have shraddha from the intelligence. That's called nidhi dhyasanam in the Upanishads, the Brihad Aranyaka Upanishads mentioned, and other places. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, O Arjuna, first hear about the nishta of those who worship in accordance with the codes of Shastra. I will then speak about the nishta of those who worship, whose worship is in violation of those rules. So he's going to first tell Arjuna about the nishta of those who worship in accordance with the codes of the Shastra. And then in five, and when he gets to verse 5, then he tells about those who reject the Shastra. Okay. Sattvana rupa sarvasya shraddha bhavati bharata shraddha mayo yam purusho yo yat shraddha sa eva saha. O son of Bharat, according to one's existence under the various modes of nature, one evolves a particular kind of faith. The living being is said to be of a particular faith according to the modes he has acquired. So here, sattva means existence, and anurupa, following the form, following his existence. So shraddha bhavati. So the shraddha appears, bhavati, becomes manifest, following the form of the sattva. In everyone, sarvasya. So you have something like this going on. You have the purva samskars. Right, and the previous birth, then that determines, you can think it's going up like this, the different gunas which are affecting that living entity's subtle body. So the modes in the heart, that's how it's mentioned. And then it goes up to the antakarana, or the mind. Internal senses. Mainly here's the mind. The gunas in the heart are reflected onto the mind and establish the mind. So everyone's existence, which is the next thing, which is also called citta, or consciousness, is established from the mind. And then finally, the last thing is shraddha. Yeah, this is citta. The main word is here, sattva, the existence, or the consciousness. Sometimes citta is seen as mind also, but this is the main word here, sattva. So then the person's faith, his attraction, also his taste, is established like this. So this is from the previous life. And the gunas basically are affecting the subtle body. And then it creates the faith. So that everyone's faith is based on the mind or the subtle body, which reflects the gunas, which are established in the heart. And you see the word shraddha three times. Shraddha maya. So he becomes full of this kind of faith. Yo yat shraddha. Sa evasa. So of the particular type of faith, he becomes filled with that faith, and which is based on sattva anarupa. It follows the sattva. So the commentators say that these things are all affecting one another. And this svabhavaja indicates this. You know, this purva samskars. Ah, good question. Well, I would imagine they become established in the mind. And that creates the gunas which affect the mind. Heart region, maybe. Because that's where everything's going on. There's the mind, you have the intelligence, the consciousness, the soul's there in the heart. Prabhupada writes, following exactly Bhaktivinoda Thakur's tika, everyone has a particular type of faith, whoever he is, but his faith is considered good, passionate, or ignorant according to the nature he has acquired. Thus, according to his particular type of faith, one associates with certain persons and does everything according to his faith. And Prabhupada describes, actually, the soul is ansha of the Supreme Lord, and he's completely transcendental to the modes, but when he turns his face away from the Lord, he comes into contact with the material nature and becomes conditioned. He generates his own position by association with the different varieties of prakriti or material nature. Although one may be conducted by some impression, that's samskar. You see that? Or some conception of life. Originally, he's nirgun. Therefore, one has to become cleansed of material contamination that he has acquired in order to regain his relationship with the Lord. That is the only path back without fear. Prabhupada says, Shraddha, faith is significant here. Shraddha, or faith, originally comes out of the mode of goodness. One's faith may be in the demigod, or some created god, or some mental concoction. One's strong faith is supposed to be productive of works of material goodness. But in material conditional life, no works are completely purified. They are mixed. They are not in pure goodness. Pure goodness is transcendental. In pure goodness, one can understand the real nature of the Lord. As long as one's faith is not completely in purified goodness, the faith is subject to contamination by any of the modes. The contaminated modes expand to the heart. Therefore, according to the position of the heart, in contact with a particular mode of nature, one's faith is established. It should be understood if one's heart is in the mode of goodness, his faith is in goodness. If his heart is in passion, his faith is in passion. If his heart's in darkness, his faith's also in darkness. Thus we see different types of faith in this world, and there are different types of religions due to different types of faith. The real principle of religious faith is situated in the mode of pure goodness, but because the heart is tainted, now it's tainted, we find different types of religious principles. Thus, according to different types of faith, there are different types of worship. See, so Prabhupada's telling the same thing. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written, this chitta is called sattva, and when it is purified, abhaya results. Prabhupada writes also, fearlessness is the result. When the chitta becomes purified, therefore it was said, abhayam shuddha sattva shamsudhi jnana yoga vivastitihi. When someone's purified, that's recommended for a sannyasi, right? Fearlessness, purification of existence. The faith of pure chitta is the seed of nirgun bhakti. The faith of the pure chitta is the seed of nirgun bhakti. The faith of the impure heart is sagun, bound by the modes. I am now explaining sagun shraddha. Please listen. He's not talking about nirgun shraddha here, which is generally what we understand when we hear the word shraddha. But this is not that kind of shraddha. It's sagun shraddha, not nirgun. It's lokik shraddha, based on the modes of nature. Well, you can take your pick. Well, here, that generally means the mind. So as I said, well, we just kind of, to give it a different idea, the gunas are in the heart, or in the mind. So therefore, they affect the mind. The mind functions according to the gunas. So the gunas in the heart are reflected in the mind, which creates your sattva, with your consciousness. And then your consciousness, or sattva, creates your faith, naturally. And the people you associate with, and the food you eat, and who you worship, and all of this, all based upon the sattva of the person, the existence. And it establishes faith, and his nature becomes prominent that way. Everything he does is based on that. So
intelligence has no role to play?
Well, antakarana means internal senses. It would indicate the intelligence also there. And then, you've heard this is one of the 24 elements of Sankhya's contaminated consciousness. So that's this chitta or sattva. Antakarana includes the intelligence, but it doesn't. The intelligence is that has discrimination. It's also affected by the gunas in the heart. It means the antakarana. Well, they use, you know, these words are kind of interchangeable. Sometimes citta is used for mind. So it's the modes are affected, the mind is affected by the gunas. So that means the intelligence is also affected by the gunas, which is based on the previous samskars. And then there, then you have, then you, your consciousness is contaminated by that particular mixture of the modes. And then your Shraddha is born from that. So now Krishna says, if you want to determine a person's faith, see who he's worshipping. And Arjuna says, which mode is present in the various types of worship in this world? And Krishna explains in text 4. Yajante satvika devan yaksha rakshansi rajasaha pretan bhuta ganangs chanye yajante tamasa janaha. Men in the mode of goodness worship demigods. Those in passion worship demons, and those in ignorance worship ghosts and spirits. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has commented that now the Lord gives some details here. Those with sattvic chitta develop sattvic shraddha, and they worship the sattvic devatas according to the injunctions of the sattvic shastras. The same principle applies to those in rajasic and tamasic chitta. Right, so those with sattvic chitta develop sattvic shraddha. That's from here to here. And they worship sattvic devatas according to the injunctions of the sattvic shastras. So those who are in have rajasic chitta, they develop rajasic shraddha, and then they worship rajasic demigods according to the rajasic shastras. And those who have tamasic chitta, then they develop tamasic shraddha. They worship tamasic devatas according to the tamasic shastras. Like we know the Puranas are based in this way, right? When we had our first class, we saw that you have those who, the Satvagun Puranas are propounding Vishnu puja. And the Rajasic Puranas are propounding Brahma Puja. And those who are in Tamasic Puranas are propounding Mahadev Puja, Shiva. And Prabhupada gives some example about those Rajasic persons. As we recall that during Second World War, a man in Calcutta worshipped Hitler because, thanks to that war, he had amassed a large amount of wealth by dealing in the black market. Similarly, those in the modes of passion and ignorance generally select a powerful man to be God. They think that anyone can be worshipped as God and that the same results will be obtained. Now, it is clearly described here that those who are in the mode of passion worships and create such gods, and those who are in the mode of ignorance, darkness, worship dead spirits. Dead spirits. It's almost a contradiction, huh? Sometimes people worship at the tomb of some dead man. Have you ever seen that? Like I told you, in the village, huh? How many of you have seen that? Raise your hand. Worshipping the tombs at the graveyard. Not so many, a few. Like I told you about the Chinese, right? They dig up the bones of their ancestors and they have a big feast for all of them, you know. Sexual service is also considered to be in the mode of darkness. I don't know exactly what he's referring to there, but it doesn't sound very good. Especially after the last sentence, it makes you wonder what he's referring to. You know. Similarly, in remote villages in India, there are worshippers of ghosts. Mm-hmm. We have seen that in India, the lower class people sometimes go to the forest, and if they have knowledge that a ghost lives in a tree, they worship that tree and offer sacrifices. These different kinds of worship are not actually God worship. God worship is for persons who are transcendentally situated in pure goodness. Sattvam vishuddham vasudeva shabditam. Right, so originally, shadha is meant for shuddha sattva, shadha, nirgun shadha. Yes. So, we see that even the people in the West who don't, you know, do any puja specifically, but they still worship somebody because they have posters on their walls of their pop stars, their sports stars, their famous singers, or famous actresses like this. And it's, in a sense, they're kind of like worshiping those persons because they always think about them. You know, they look at their pictures. They dream of them. Huh? Manmana bhava manbhata. Become my devotee. Think of me. Worship me. And they kind of worship them because just like, you know, people that like, Elvis Presley. You know, they have Elvis Presley t-shirts, Elvis Presley hats, Elvis Presley buttons. They have posters of Elvis Presley in their home. They have little statues of Elvis Presley. They have all of his movies on a CD and they watch them. They always play Elvis Presley music in the house. And they read the biographies about Elvis Presley. They go to the place where he grew up. Actually, we used to do Sankirtan at that place in Memphis, Tennessee, because it was a very good place. We used to distribute books because the people would come in the droves, I mean thousands of people, and they would line up waiting to get into his house so then they would see his grounds, and we would distribute books to those people. You know, they would come to, it's like they come to do a yatra to the holy tirtha of Elvis Presley Loka, you know. And they did everything except for bow down, you know what I mean? But when they went in there, they were also like practically like this, you know, like in a very worshipful mood. But, you know, Western people, they don't bow down or fold their hands, but they're in a mood, that same mood was there, you know. Similarly, in America, there was a famous TV show called Star Trek. Have you ever heard of that? Yeah. You know, they have like a whole cult. Well, about 10 years ago, I don't know if it's still going on, but there was a whole cult. They would always play these reruns of Star Trek, and you could buy the outfit, the Star Trek suit in the shop. People would buy these suits, and they had models of the USS Enterprise, you know, this spaceship that, I don't know, I can't explain how it looks. And the people would make this model and, you know, they'd put it like on their dining room table or somewhere in their living room. And they would sell these little communicators that they would have like with some lights and they'd be like, beam me up, Scotty. Beam me up, you know. They had this, you know. They buy this little communicator, and then they created this Klingon language, you know. There was, you know, they, for those who know what this TV show, they had like they kind of expanded upon all of the little details. They created a whole language called Klingon because there was some shows where they went to some far out planets and they met these Klingons and had big ears and they were strange looking people. From another, aliens from another planet. So they created a whole language. So the people, they buy these suits, they get the communicators, they get the thing, they learn the language, they speak in the language. You know, it's like a whole cult. I mean, you think we're a cult, but they have these people in America like that. Amazing. In I told you in Japan they created this Tamaguchi. No, it's called Tamaguchi. Have you ever heard of this? It's a little computer. And it's for people who are lonely, you know. They don't have maybe they're a lady whose husband died or someone, they don't, you know, instead of having an animal or something, or instead of worshipping Krishna, they have a little computer. And the computer is called Tamaguchi. It's like a person, you know, it's like a little baby. It makes some noise, and then it says you have to, feed it. And you feed it by pressing some buttons. You have to know the code for certain food you give. And then later, there's some noise. And then, you have to dress it. You have to, put it to sleep at night. Wake it up in the morning, then feed it again. And, like this. And the person becomes attached to the little computer as if it's like his child. As if the computer's like dependent on you. It develops a kind of vatsalya bhav. Yeah? And the person falls in love with the little baby computer and serves the computer by pushing the buttons when it's needed, when it makes the sound. And then when it gets old and the battery runs out, then you have to go on the internet and find a Tamaguchi funeral parlor. And and a cemetery where you send your Tamaguchi. It's like the people take it seriously. It's amazing. They do. And it just happens to have the name Tamaguchi, which just sounds like Tamaguni. You know? It's so perfect name for, and that's from Japan. It became very popular, and some guy made millions of dollars on these things. You know, it's amazing. Really, truly amazing. I mean, because you're living here, maybe you don't hear about all these crazy things that go on in the West, but it's the people are like mad, really. They're really mad. You know that Bhaktivinoda Thakur confronted people who are worshipping the tree, like that, and he had some man chant Bhagavatam, and the tree, was destroyed. In England, they have 200 Satan mandirs for worshipping Satan, who is the chief of all the devils, according to the Christian Shastra. Right? And it is the 200 mandirs to worship the devil, right? And in England, that's just in England, one country. And the statistics show this was about 10 years ago or so, statistics show that 10,000 babies per year are sacrificed in Satan puja. 10,000 babies every year. Very strange kind of people in Tamagun.
It's legal?
I don't think so. No, it's not legal. No, definitely not. So, in the West, in India at least there's, it's like you have a kind of idea of what's going on, because it's some deviation from the Shastra, but in the West it's even more bizarre, because there's no bars or limitations to the behavior of the people. They can just do whatever they want, because there's no scripture to follow, and there's no traditions. There's no culture, really. I mean, America's just a couple hundred years old, So they're living just according to their imagination. Who knows where those people are going to go when they die? To Tamaguchi Loka? Or to Klingon? To the planet Klingon? They'll have to, Krishna will have to make a new planet for those people. So now, Krishna says, Arjuna, you've asked about the status of those who discard the scriptural injunctions and yet perform worship with Shraddha. Now hear my reply. So these people have completely disregarded the scriptures. It was in text 4, they still followed some scriptural, but they did it in three modes of nature. They worship demigods like Brahma, Shiva, Indra, Chandra. They can also worship Vishnu sometimes, but like the Mayavadis who worship this philosophized Vishnu, they're also in Sattvagun, Nirvisheshvadis. They can also be in Sattvagun. They do like Panchopasana. You can worship demigods in Rajasic also. You can worship Devi and different Rakshas, Yakshas. And you can even Lord Shiva, you can worship him in a higher way, and like in the mode of goodness, like Markandeya Rishi or Bhushundi, yeah, from the Ramayana. You know, Bhushundi or Bhushundi, Kaga Bhushundi. He said, yeah, crow. So he also worshipped Mahadev. And Markandeya, what his result was that he saw, you know, the universal destruction. It kind of enlightened him to see the temporary nature of the material world. And for the crow, he got bhakti to Ramachandra. Right? But then you look at Banasura or Ravana, they worship Shiva also in passion. And then Bhaumasura even could be considered in ignorance. So there's different combinations. But anyway, those who are in ignorance generally worship those ghosts and so forth. And in passion, they worship the Rakshas, Yakshas, Rakshasas. That's what it means, demons. Or they can also worship demigods in mode of passion, like Devi. A lot of Devi puja is in passion, mostly.
So depends upon the consciousness.
Depends upon the consciousness, of course. I mean, it's a general statement. Krishna's making sutras, and then you have to go and see all the particulars of the situation. You know, there are many manifestations here. Okay, so now let's hear the next verse. Ashastra viditam ghoram tapyante ye tapo janaha dambahankara samyukta kamaraga balanvitaha kashayanta sharirastam ramam achetasah amam chayvanta sharirastam vidya asuranischayan. Those who undergo severe austerities and penance not recommended in the scriptures, performing them out of pride and egoism, who are impelled by lust and attachment, who are foolish, and who torture the material elements of the body as well as the supersoul dwelling within, are to be known as demons. Asura. Nishchayan. They are determined to be demons. Right? So they are directing ashastra vihitam. And it is ghoram, it's harmful to others, horrible. Tapyante ye tapojana. So they do some tapas. Why? How? Or like based on what? Dambha ahankara samyukta. So those who are proud and egotistic, they surely must violate the rules of Shastra. And kama means to have desires like remaining young forever, avoiding old age and death. They want to become immortal. I am immortal! Who's that? Aranyakashipu, right? And they want to obtain a kingdom. These are different kinds of kama they have when they do their tapas. Raga means they are strongly attached to their austerities. And bala means they have the capacity to do tapas like Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu, bala. Very powerful austerities. So this kind of thing is disturbing to the Lord in the heart. Not that he is, you know, physically, biologically, you know, affected by, you know, the man cutting his own flesh and offering it into the fire, sacrificial fire. But it's just, you know, the Lord is he's disturbed in such a way. He's living in the heart of this person. And it's not so nice, you know. Plus, this person is actually a demon, so he's disregarding the scriptures, which means he's disregarding Krishna himself, the Lord in the heart. So that's why the Lord doesn't also, he doesn't appreciate it. Baladeva Vibhushan has written, "It has been stated in the previous chapter that those who are neglectful of Vedic authority, Veda Bhaya, can never be delivered from their bad fate. Now, this is corroborated in the two texts beginning with Ashastra 5 and 6. There are those who execute austerities in defiance of the Vedas, which are enjoined in their own concocted scriptures and are horrible and cause distress to other living beings. These people are characterized by hankering for sense gratification and by their stubborn insistence that we can accomplish everything on our own. They abuse the physical elements that compose their bodies. They emaciate their bodies by unnecessary fasting and so on. By their neglect, they also torment me, the supersoul dwelling within their bodies. They are oblivious, devoid of understanding how to discriminate according to scripture. You should know such persons who are outside the scope of Vedic authority to be demons. Thus it is implied that the bad fate of such persons is unavoidable." Prabhupada writes, "Such unauthorized fasting or austerities for some political end are certainly very disturbing to others. They are not mentioned in the Vedic literature. A demoniac person may think that he can force his enemy or other parties to comply with his desire by this method, but sometimes one dies by such fasting. These acts are not approved by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he says that those who engage in them are demons. Such demonstrations are insults to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because they are enacted in disobedience to the Vedic scriptural injunctions. The word achetasa is significant in this connection, because it means that they have no consciousness." So those who do not have a normal mental condition disobey the scriptures and manufacture their own way of austerity and penance. One should always remember the ultimate end of the demoniac people as described in the previous chapter. If the Lord forces them to take birth in the wombs of demoniac persons, consequently they will live by demoniac principles life after life, without knowing their relationship with the Lord. If, however, such persons are fortunate enough to be guided by a spiritual master who can direct them to the path of Vedic wisdom, they can get out of this entanglement and achieve the goal, ultimately. If they're lucky, maybe, hopefully. Okay. So, if the persons are not worshipping someone, how can you tell what is their shraddha? Sure, that's easy, Arjuna. You can just see what foods they're eating. That way, you can tell. That was not in any commentary. That was just my own insertion. It's from Mudha Godas Darshani Tika. Aharastvapi sarvasya chivido bhavati priyaha yagyastapastata danam tesham bhedam imam shrinu. Even the food each person prefers is of three kinds, according to the three modes of material nature. The same is true of sacrifices, austerities, and charity. Now hear of the distinction between them. So here Prabhupada says, there are missionary workers who advocate that one can do whatever he likes and attain perfection. But these foolish guides are not acting according to the direction of Scripture. They are manufacturing ways and misleading the people in general. You ever heard of the Morgi mission? Prabhupada wrote a drama called the Morgi mission. You heard of it? Huh? You never heard this drama? Well, I didn't read it, but I heard about it. Prabhupada wrote a drama that there was two men, like in Calcutta, and they're on the street, and they're friends, they meet each other. The other one man says, nice to meet you, how are you? He says, I'm fine, how are you? He says, fine. He says, so what are you doing with yourself now? And the man says, I've taken sannyas. And the man says, what? You've taken sannyas? How you've become a sannyasi? I do not understand. But you're living the same way you were living before. How are you a sannyasi? And he says, that's no problem. In the Morgi mission, one can be a sannyasi, and he can just go on living the way he lives. It's not a problem. He says, really? And he says, yes, you don't know about Morgi mission? No. He says, yes, this is by the authoritative injunctions of the Morgi mission. Oh, okay. And so you don't have any restrictions and you can do anything? And don't you have to give up any items, like food items? And he said, no. In the Morgi mission, one can eat anything he wants. And he can still progress on the spiritual path. And he said, really? Can eat anything you want? Yes, that's fine. Anyway, the drama goes on like this, just the two men talking and showing the, you know, how ridiculous it is. You know, without saying who it was, but at the same time, everybody knows, because there are people that eat chicken, and you know, it's like the main food that they eat, and they claim to be sannyasis, but they don't, you know, renounce anything. So where is the sannyas? You know, when Prabhupada wrote a satirical drama like that. And I think you should try to find it and get it. It will be very funny. And you can perform that on Sunday, maybe, on the stage for the guests. It will be very funny. And you can say, this drama was written by Srila Prabhupada. And then perform a drama. Okay. So now, we're beginning with the foods. Ayu sattva balarogya sukha priti vivardhanaha rasya snigdha stirarhidya ahara sattvika priyaha. Foods dear to those in the mode of goodness increase the duration of life, purify one's existence, and give strength, health, happiness, and satisfaction. Such foods are juicy, fatty, wholesome, and pleasing to the heart. So here, fatty does not mean from chicken or beef. But it means, snigdha means from ghee. Well, we have to point this out, especially for Western people. Because fatty, they may have this idea. You know, in India, they say, what kind of food would you like? Veg or non-veg? Right? Like on the train or in the airplane. But actually, what they're using is a kind of language which makes it seem that it's okay. In other words, instead of actually saying what it is, they just say what it's not. It's non-veg. In other words, you can turn it around and say, would you like to have rotten, stinking corpse or non-rotten, stinking corpse? Would you like to have, you know, dead flesh or non-dead flesh? But the way they present it is like, you know, non-veg. Yeah, what is that non-veg? So something, you know, some bloody, you know, carcass from a dead animal. It is mentioned in the Vedas, in the Shrutis, ahara, shudhau, sattva, shuddhi. You know, that what you eat, it develops your consciousness, your existence, sattva. Ramanujacharya quoted that famous Shruti maxim in his commentary to this verse. And you can find statements in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam describing, I forget, there's a famous verse, na mamsa bhakshane, something, madhya cha maituni cha. Then it says, pravritti esha bhutanam nivrittis tu mahapala. Mahapala, this famous verse. That says that eating meat is not against the scriptural injunctions, and neither is drinking wine or sex. These are pravritti esha bhutanam. These are natural for living entities, but nivrittis tu mahapala. But those who can renounce these things, they get the mahapala, they get the great result of dharma. So there's injunctions which allow people of a lower nature to, in a very restrictive way, take these different things. Like there's the Kshatramani Yajna, where you worship Indra and you can offer some wine and different liquors and then you can drink them, you know, in the Vedic sacrifice. And then there's also, you know, this sacrificing of the white goat on the, you know, black moon night and to Kali, and you're offering, you're saying mamsa karati iti mamsaha, that I'm taking this meat but later this goat will eat me, like this. So, you know, there are some injunctions, and these are never to be considered a dharma for persons of a lower ilk. But they're never to be promoted in human society. They're just allowed so that those persons who are, factually they are a dharma, but they should never be accused of being a dharma because they actually bring the people from a dharma to dharma. So therefore, they should never be condemned. That's the point. Because by doing that, they will come to dharma by performing those sacrifices. Otherwise you have a situation where, like in the West, the people, they just slaughter houses and they eat meat whenever they want. They have McDonald's and they're not performing any Kshatramani, you know, yajna mantras and in McDonald's or in the liquor houses. They're not chanting any, you know, performing any sacrifice. But here we have a description, sattvika priya, foods which are dear to sattvic persons. First word is ayu. Such foods will increase the duration of life. Ayu sattva. And bal arogya. They give strength and health. In other words, they're tasty and they're also good for the person because they keep disease away, arogya. Sukha priti. They give happiness and satisfaction. Increase the happiness and satisfaction. Rasya means juicy, like gura or gur. Gur is given as an example. Gur, gur, gura. In Sanskrit it's called gura. Gura, gura, gur. Yeah, because when you put gur in your mouth, there's immediately juice comes, even if it's dry, right? Some rushes. Ah. And snigdha, as we said, means ghee. And stira indicates that it enduring, it stays for some time. Ridya means it's pleasing to the heart, it's healthy for him. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that pavitram should be added to this verse, the word pavitram. Because he's saying that even these kinds of foods, if they're not cooked by a pure person, served by a pure in a pure way, in a pure place, like in a clean place, then they should be rejected. So I said this word, perfect, and they have to be cooked by a pure person. Served by a pure person in a pure place. So they should also be pleasing to the eyes. And they are generally made from cow products, wheat, rice, sugar, and milk and yogurt. They increase enthusiasm. But even these foods should be eaten in moderation. You shouldn't eat too much of these foods. And if they're not offered, then they should be abandoned. Because it's mentioned, anam vishta jala mutram yad vishnor anivedanam. Brahma Vaivarta and Padma Purana, anam vishta, food is like stool, jala mutram, and water is like urine. Yad Vishnor Navid Anivedanam, if it's not offered to Lord Vishnu. Yad Vishnor Anivedanam. Anam Vishta Jalam Mutram. Yad Vishnor Anivedanam. So a Vaishnava should not accept Sattvic foods if they're not offered to the Lord. No. They're in two Puranas, Padma and Brahma Vaivarta. In the Sattvic and Rajasic Puranas, both in. Even in the Brahma Vaivarta, that's Rajasic Purana. So you can quote that when you go out preaching to people. A very powerful shloka. There's another verse, something, Pratishta Sukari Vishta. You heard that? Who said that? Oh, really? Saraswati Thakur. What? Yes. Okay, now let's go to Rajasic food. We'll taste a little bit of Rajasic food now, saying. kadvamla lavanat yushna tiksha ruksha vidahinaha ahara rajasas yeshta dukha shoka maya pradaha. Foods that are too bitter, too sour, too salty, too hot, too pungent, too dry, and burning are dear to those in the mode of passion. Such foods cause distress, misery, and disease. So the adjective ati is meant to be modifying all seven of these nouns. That's why I added a few more. Because salty is okay, but not too much salty, or too hot, right? Too pungent. So, ati is found lavanati. Lavan, salt, and ati is put on the end of that. Lavanat yushna. It's kind of stuck in there. Right? Ati ushna. Ushna. So the first word, katu, means bitter. Like you use a lot of neem in your... If you put too much neem in a sabji, then it's too bitter. In Russia, they have... what is it called? No, in Russia. In Russia, they have a kind of... Oh, it's in English, it's called wormwood. It's a herb. Anyway, in Russia, they have another name for it. I forgot the name now. But this wormwood... It's an herb, and it's so bitter. And I take it sometimes for my health, like with potato, I cook it. It like really cleans out everything, because it's so bitter. No living entity can bear it inside. And after you eat some of this stuff, even like a quarter teaspoon, like if you mix it with some sabji or rice, then if you eat Karela, it tastes sweet. That's how bitter it is. You can imagine. It's very, very bitter. So you put very much, you can't put more than an eighth of a teaspoon or even a sixteenth. It's very, very powerful. Then amla, sour. Well, actually, the fruit amla, right? That is also very sour. Amala. You find in a lot of the Ayurvedic, tonics and things. Lavan means salty. Ati ushna. And ushna, here, ushna means temperature hot. And tikshna means chili hot. Right. Too much chili. Oh, let's see. Tikshna, yeah, that's like radish or chili. Muli? Yeah? Or chili. That's like pungent. Tikshna. And ruksha is dry, like when hing or asvatida. If you put too much hing in the sabji, after you eat it, it's like you're very dry. Your whole skin in your mouth is start to dry up if you put too much. And vidahina means like burning. And they give the example like fried chana or roasted black gram. Fried chana dal. Sometimes it's it's like this burning. Roasted black gram. I don't know what that is. I don't need the stuff. Roasted black gram. Gram. The other one was chana. Fried chana. Chana dal. I think they serve that in the trains sometimes. Right? Right? Chana, and they put a lot of spices in it. Yeah. So then, dukkha, shoka, amaya. So, distress comes first. This is in a progressive sequence. Distress, dukkha comes first in the tongue and the throat. And then shoka, or anxiety, misery comes because you become anxiety about the reactions that are going to take place. It's very soon. And then amaya means you become actually sick. So Krishna like made a joke there. That's true, nonetheless. Well, anyway, from Krishna's point of view, there's distress. Well, if it's too hot, it's going to burn your mouth. Right? That's tikshna. Any pepper that's pungent, that's the other one. Huh? That's different. I mean, milk is... Prasadam is prasadam. Hot chapati. Well, if the milk's too hot, you're going to also burn your tongue, right? Have you ever done that? Yeah. Huh? Yeah. Well, it'll burn your mouth, that's for sure. And then you'll be in distress. And then I don't know if you'll get sick, but... Okay, next one. Tamasa priyam. Yatta yamam gattarasam puti paryushitam chayat uchishtam apicha medhyam bhojanam tamasa priyam. You're laughing, eh? Huh? Puti, this word. Do you have that in Hindi also? Puti? Huh? It sounds funny though, huh? From the word puti, we have the word putrid in English. Yeah? Putrid. That's what it means, like rotten. It has a bad smell. That's puti. But yata yaman, that's the main thing. It means that it's not cooked properly, or it may be burnt, and particularly it means that it's been cooked more than 3 hours before being eaten. That means it gets... That means that food, that kind of food is gata rasam. It loses its juice, and it loses its natural taste. Puti, we already described. Paryushitam means cooked the previous day. So that kind of food, you know, it's like you can tell it's from yesterday by looking at it. Or if it's more than 3 hours, 4, 5, 6 hours. Like you make a salad in the morning and then in the afternoon, it doesn't look the same. You know, and you don't even feel like eating it because just by looking at it. And that's digestion begins with looking at something, right? And smelling it. And then you touch it, and then you put it in your mouth. Then the juices start to, digestive juices are manifested. But it begins by looking at it. So it has to look nice also, the food. And if it's sitting around for a few hours or half a day, especially in India when it's hot, you know, then it really becomes rotten. What's that? Oh, prasadam is different. Prasadam is nirgun. And that's described uchishtam. Because you're not supposed to... Food which is left by somebody else, that's like beggars eat that, you know, if they get it out of the garbage can or something. But when you get the remnants from the guru or from the deity... That's also uchishta, but it's not considered in this category. It's nirgun. It's prasad. Yeah. So prasadam is actually above all the three of these descriptions. cha medium or a medium means untouchable things like eggs, meat, and fish. But these things are very dear for those in the mode of ignorance. But those who are in goodness offer their obeisances from very far away to these foods. So Prabhupada, I didn't underline any of the commentary, but it's all understood. Prabhupada writes, remnants of food may be eaten only when they are part of a meal that was first offered to the Supreme Lord, or first eaten by saintly persons, especially the spiritual master. See, that's Baladeva Vidyabhushan's commentary. Otherwise, the remnants of food are considered in the mode of darkness because they increase infection or disease. Such foodstuffs, although very palatable to persons in darkness, are neither liked nor even touched by those in goodness. They offer their obeisances from far away. The best food is the remnants of what is offered to the Supreme Lord. And Krishna, and Prabhupada begins to describe Krishna Prasadam. I told you about the dog nectar that they used to, in Korea. They eat dogs. That's really, I'm fortunately I never had an opportunity to smell or come near the pot in these pot of dog. Yeah, I can't eat any spicy, even if it's Mahaprasadam, but that's just, Yeah, well, if you eat too much prasadam, even if it's not hot or spicy, then you'll get dukkha and amaya, right? And then it will increase if it has more of that, you know, a lot of chili and sugar and fried food. So everything has to be eaten in moderation. But prasadam, I mean, prasadam is transcendental because Krishna accepts it. But the person who cooks it may cook it in a passionate way. Or the person's consciousness may be also not pure, so pure. So the prasadam, I mean, Krishna has accepted the prasadam. If there's some devotion, then he accepts it. But the person's consciousness also enters into the food. Therefore, in the last days, Prabhupada, he didn't want any ladies cooking for him. Not just because ladies are impure, but usually there would be some men coming, you know, in the kitchen or helping, something like that. So once he allowed one of his female disciples, he said, okay, she can cook, but there should be no male helpers. All the helpers should be women. Because he didn't want any intermingling of the sexes while the lady's cooking. See, because then it enters into the food. When Prabhupada got, in that very sensitive time when he was at the mid or end of 1977, then it seems that he kind of restricted that even more. He didn't want the ladies cooking for him. So that's another aspect of prasadam, that you can see that, you know, the consciousness is carried through the food, even though it's prasadam. So there may be other things that are like carried, but the prasadam itself can give you liberation, it can give you love of God, it's nirgun, but there may be some other things there. Maybe you can look at it like the dham is pure, but then there's this thin layer of protomaya covering the dham. So I think prasadam is like this too. It's pure. The prasadam is pure, but when you go to Vrindavan, like, it looks like it's dirty, there's pigs, and there's, you know, Brijabasis are trying to cheat you. That's true. But there's something deeper also. There's something more. So prasadam is like that too. The Jamuna River is now very much polluted by the Delhi factories. I had one god brother. I asked him, would you like to go to the Jamuna? He said, well, I went yesterday, but I wouldn't go swimming in it. I said, why? He said, it was so polluted. It was disgusting. There was bubbles and all kinds of stuff floating on the top, so that I wouldn't go inside. So, on one level, yeah, it's true. There's some. But there's something deeper, too. So we should forget about that. Well, I guess they would get a mixture of the results then. Right? They'll get the anxiety, the distress, anxiety, and the disease. And what happens when they eat the tamagun food? I guess they something similar, like some disease or some tamagun increases and their consciousness goes down. Consciousness goes down, there may be some problem in the body, indigestion and so forth. Meat is a medium, untouchable, and it's also rotten. Right? It's parayushitam. It's old, rotten, a medium, untouchable food in ignorance. I don't know. Well, I think you do offer some water, right? I don't know if it's specifically saying that, but maybe it was just poetically expressed. Maybe it means like anything that you drink. I don't know. I don't think that you have to offer the water, but you have some other things that you drink. Fruit juices, milk, and other liquids. No, it's just ati lavana, too much. Ati mirch. No, there has to be little salt. Should be little salt. Salt gives the flavor. Little salt, not too much. Because they are sometimes offered Prabhupada these kind of diets, boiled, everything boiled. And he said, I would rather die. He said, let me eat proper sabjis and sweets and let me die than having to eat this kind of sick food, sick food, whatever. No, he didn't use that term. I don't know what he called it, but I forget. Bland. Okay. Anything else? We'll stop now. Prashna Sagar Maharaj is formulating some questions from in the depths of the ocean of Prashna. What do you think about this, Radhishyam Prabhu? Shall we call? Can we? Krishna is calling these people, kind of people, asuras, and the commentators have also added these politicians on the list. The people who perform these austerities which are not given in the Shastras. Well, we can throw our hands in the air and say, well, what kya kare? Krishna said it in the Bhagavad Gita, we should follow Bhagavan, he's set the standard. Because actually, truly speaking, if you do something without thinking about God, it means it's sinful. And if you're not thinking about God, it means you're averse to God. And if you're averse to God, it means you're a demon. You know. So, I think Radha Govinda Maharaj said also when he came here, right? These people, if they're not a devotee, they're rascals. Right? He said something like that. Oh, Bhima. What's that?
Unloyal.
Bhima. Bhiman. Bhiman, like a demon. Bhiman, like a demon. Anyway, maybe you can use that word then. Use that word. That's too strong? Yeah? Well, better than Asura, right? People know what Asura means, don't they? Anyway, say a non-godly, he's non-godly. Non-veg. He's non-godly. What he is, we will not say, but he's non-godly. Okay, we'll stop now. Oh, you have more? More questions? Well, the living entity in the spiritual is Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam, right? So, there has to be always something increasing for the jiva, because the nature of the soul is dynamic. So in the spiritual world, you know, like the prema is always increasing, and the lila is increasing and diversifying and so many things. So here the living entities have to have that there has to be some kind of mechanism for binding more and more absorption in something. Just if you just have something, then you do it or you don't do it, and then there's no increasing. So there has to be this function just to accommodate the nature of the spirit soul, which is always increasing. So that therefore you do something sinful, then you want to do it even more. Because then, and we can see that's what happens. Like I said, in 86, you saw those old men watching, you know, the Indian Elvis Presley dancing. But now they want to see more. They're not satisfied by just seeing this thing. Now they want to go to Star Television, they want to see maybe pornography or something more. So there has to be this accommodation, because that's the nature of the soul. But, I mean, the thing is that if one takes the yoga system, he can break that. Bhakti yogi can take it. He can break that, you know, cycle, that downward spiraling cycle, by hearing about Krishna, by doing Vaishnav seva, by doing some chanting, some kirtan. All these things will break that. So the person has a choice that he can get out from that. But there has to be a kind of ride, you know. He has to be kind of like on a ride, you know, because it's just he wants to enjoy, and it has to increase. So that's just the way it is. There has to be this.
Do pious activities have a similar counterpart also?
Yeah, yeah. Then you become more attached to doing these things, and your mode of goodness will increase, your happiness increase, your satisfaction increase, and you become more inclined, yeah, to act in that way. Whatever direction you go in, that will increase. Because the nature of the soul is to increase. The soul is dynamic, it's active, it's conscious. So there has to be direction, movement. So it's either going down or you're going more down. If you're going up, you're going further up. The soul always has a direction. It's not stagnant like matter. You have to struggle usually because of our nature, which is sinful. But persons who are not sinful, they don't have to struggle so much. If you're really changing your nature from like low tamagun to sattvic or nirgun, then there's going to be a big struggle. But if a person has already lived a very pure lifestyle, then it's that much easier for him. And if he's in an impure environment, then it becomes very easy. If he's trained as a brahmachari from, a young boy, like 6 years old, 7 years old, and if he lives in a country ashram somewhere, away from the city, away from the cinemas and clubs and women and everything, it becomes very easy. But anyway, the struggle can be also part of the offering to the Lord. And the struggle can help to keep the one humble. Because if everything's so easy and you're so self-satisfied, then you can be very easily proud. But if you're struggling with some previous samskaras, then it helps you to remain humble. All right, let's stop now. It's about 6 o'clock.